The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, June 1. It's the first day of the hurricane season. It's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, it's the C.A. Nuri and I shall be your host for the day. Today, I have a treat for you. That means more likely I'm not going to be talking as much today because I have a clip that I think the Bahamas, the people living in the Bahamas, those who listen to the sound of my voice, need to hear. There are certain programs that we in the Bahamas are not privy to unless we are tuned in, right? And I happen to have been sent this clip by a friend of mine, a cousin of mine from Long Island, Donna. And he said, man, you got to listen to this. And I said, oh, I need to tune in and subscribe to this channel because this is informative. The clip is kind of long, but if I say it's worth playing, this is why I'm going to sacrifice my voice and allow it to play because it's worth listening to. It's a clip called The Breakdown. That's what the show is called on YouTube, The Breakdown. The TV station is called Panagenius TV. That's P-A-N-A Genius, G-E-N-I-U-S TV. The host of the show is Sandra De Boateng. It's African. Sandra De Boateng. She is the host. She's bright and smart, articulate in general. And a voice that I think we who are Africans in the diaspora, we who are conscious people in the world, we who are considering developing the Bahamas, talking global or having global conversations, these are one of the things that we should be listening to and in tuned in. So I said, Kermit, make sure you're able to play this because this is going to be my show for the day. It's a treat for my listening audience to be able to listen to this. And I pray you give me pardon for it, right? Because it's a long clip. It's going to be like 20 minutes long, but it's worth listening to. You know, when you want to share something with somebody and you say, boy, whatever it takes, I need to make sure you listen to it. This is one of those clips. So, Kermit, without any further ado, can you play that clip for me? This is The Breakdown from Panagenius TV. The host is Sandra De Boateng, an African who has her show. It's on YouTube, so you can check it out after you listen to this. And run that clip for me.
My people, the most powerful religious leader just said something that 266 popes before him refused to say for nearly 600 years. I'm sorry. Sorry for the role that the Catholic Church played in legitimizing, justifying, and institutionalizing one of the greatest crimes against humanity, the transatlantic slave trade. In his inaugural encyclical, Pope Leo issued a historic apology for the institutional church's complicity in slavery and colonial violence. His exact words, quote, "It is impossible not to feel deep sorrow when contemplating the immense suffering and humiliation endured by so many. For this, in the name of the church, I sincerely ask for pardon." He called it a wound in Christian memory. And my people, let's be very clear. This was not just a symbolic statement, because for centuries, the Catholic Church was not simply watching slavery happen from the sidelines. The church helped create the moral framework that justified conquest. It issued decrees that gave European empires religious permission to invade lands, seize resources, and enslave non-Christian peoples across Africa and the Americas. In other words, slavery was not only economic, it was spiritualized. And now, 574 years later, the Vatican is finally acknowledging it. Now, the mainstream media is covering this as a historic moment, and it is. But here's the part that they're barely talking about. The man who just made that apology, his family is Black. His grandparents were listed as Black in census records, and somewhere along the way, his family passed as white to survive. So think about the irony of this moment. The man leading the institution that signed the permission slip for the African slave trade carries the blood of the people that document was used to enslave. Let that sit for a moment. Today, we're not just talking about the apology. We're talking about a 574-year story, a document that nobody ever taught you about in school, a family secret hidden inside the Vatican, a UN vote that should have made world headlines and barely did, and the question that sits underneath all of it. What actually comes after sorry? Because my people, apologies open doors. And this apology opens the door to conversations that the world has avoided for centuries. Let's break it down. Hello and welcome to The Breakdown, where we center Africa and the Black world in today's global affairs. I'm your host, Sandra Bebu-Boateng. Now, if you're new here, welcome to the family. Please take a quick second to subscribe to our channel and hit the notification bell so you never miss a new episode. And when you're done watching, or as you're in the process of watching, drop a comment, tell me where you're tuning in from. You know, this is a global community, and I love knowing where in the world you're joining us from. All right, now, let's get into it. My people, before we talk about the apology, we need to talk about what is being apologized for, right? Because most people, when they think about the Catholic Church and slavery, they think about individual Christians who participated in the slave trade. You know, priests who looked the other way, missionaries who showed up alongside colonial armies. And yes, all of that happened. But this apology is about something much more specific, much more deliberate, and much more damning. It's about a document, a single piece of paper signed in Rome in 1452 that gave Europe's kings the legal authority to invade Africa, to capture its people, and enslave them forever. The document is called Dum Diversus, and I can almost guarantee nobody taught you in school. So here's the scene. The year is 1452. Pope Nicholas V is sitting in Rome. Portugal has been raiding the coastline of West Africa. Just 8 years earlier, in 1444, the first enslaved Africans arrived in Europe. 235 people sold in a market in Lagos, Portugal, like cattle. The Portuguese king wants more. Wants more slaves. He wants to keep going. But he wants something first. He wants God's blessing. Mm-hmm. So he writes to the Pope. And the Pope, Pope Nicholas V, writes back. On June 18, 1452, he issues a papal bull called Dum Diversus. And inside that document, he gives King Afonso V of Portugal the authority, in the name of God, to do the following: invade, search out, capture, subjugate, and reduce to perpetual servitude all pagans, unbelievers, and enemies of Christ. Perpetual servitude, forever. Authorized by Rome, signed by the Pope. Now, let me explain what a papal bull is. Because this matters, right? A papal bull is not a suggestion. It is not a recommendation. It is the Pope speaking with the full authority of God on earth, in writing, officially, for all time. In the 15th century, the Catholic Church was not just a religious institution. It was one of the most powerful governing forces in the world. When the Pope signed a document, it had the force of international law. Yeah. So this wasn't just moral permission. This was legal cover. This was God's signature on the slave trade. And it didn't stop there, no. The following year, 1455, Pope Nicholas V issued a second bull called Romanus Pontifex. This one went even further. It gave Portugal exclusive rights to territories along the entire west coast of Africa, the right to trade in enslaved people, the right to conquer and to keep. Two documents. Together, they became the foundation of what is known as the Doctrine of Discovery, the legal and religious theory that justified European colonial seizure of African and indigenous lands for the next five centuries. And here's the part that will stop you cold. These bulls were not a one-time decision. They were confirmed, renewed, reinforced by four separate popes. Pope Calixtus III in 1456, Pope Sixtus the IV in 1481, and Pope Leo X in 1514. Four popes over 62 years re-signing the same permission. This was not a mistake. This was not one man's lapse in judgment. This was institutional policy. And that's not even the most shocking part. And if you're standing, I really need you to sit for this one. For 574 years, through abolition, through civil rights, through independence movements, through every apology and every reckoning, no pope had ever stood up and said, "We did this. The Vatican did this. Not just individual Christians, us, nobody." Until this week on Monday.
The Pope's family, his maternal grandfather, Joseph Martinez, and his wife Louise, in 1900 are listed as black, not as Creole, but black in Louisiana in the federal census. And 1910 are listed as white in the federal census, still in Louisiana. 1920, they move as part of the Great Migration to Chicago, and they pass as white. In 1930 and 1940, they're white. So, you know, yeah, he knows that story. So that's a very American story.
Now, my people, this is the part of the story that nobody is telling you. And I need you to stay with me here because this is extraordinary. The man who made this is Pope Leo XIV, born Robert Francis Prevost, American, the first American pope in the history of the Catholic Church. And within hours of his election last year, within hours, genealogists started digging into his family tree. And what they found changed everything. Everything. Let's start in New Orleans, the 7th Ward. The year is 1900. There's a couple living there. Joseph Martinez, a cigar maker, and his wife, Louise Bacui. They're listed in census records that year as black. Joseph Martinez was born in Haiti. Yeah, Haiti. The country that staged the only successful slave revolution in human history. The country that defeated Napoleon's army and declared independence in 1804. The country that was punished for that very freedom for the next two centuries, forced to pay reparations to France, isolated by the international community, strangled economically for the crime of freeing itself. The Pope's grandfather came from Haiti. And Louise Bacui, his grandmother, was born in New Orleans, a free woman of color in the 7th Ward, the historic heart of New Orleans's Creole community. The Creole community of New Orleans is one of the most extraordinary and most misunderstood communities in American history. Free people of color who existed in the complicated space between slavery and freedom, between black and white, navigating a society that wanted to crush them from both directions. Joseph and Louise married in 1887. They had children. They built a life. And then in 1910, they left. They joined what historians call the Great Migration, 6 million black Southerners who fled the American South between 1915 and 1970, fleeing Jim Crow, fleeing lynchings, fleeing a system designed to keep them poor and terrorized. They headed north to Chicago, to Detroit, to New York. Joseph and Louise went to Chicago. And here's where the story takes a turn that should make every single one of us stop and think. In New Orleans, in every census record, in every document, they were listed as black. But once they arrived in Chicago, they were listed as white. And there is a Creole term for this, passé blanc, to pass as white. The family historian who uncovered all of this, Jari Honora, put it this way, quote, fairly consistently, they are listed in census and other records in New Orleans as black and mulatto. But once they migrate to Chicago, those identifiers are all switched to white. I don't fault them at all. I see it as a decision to safeguard their livelihoods, an economic decision to shift racial identities, end quote, to safeguard their livelihoods. Think about what that means. This family looked at the world around them, the segregation, the violence, the closed doors, the burning crosses, and they made a calculation, a survival calculation. They chose to disappear into whiteness so that their children could eat, so their children could work, so their children could live. And it worked. Their daughter, Mildred, was born in Chicago, listed as white, grew up as white, married, had children. One of those children became the Pope of the Catholic Church. And the Pope's own brother, John Prevost, told the New York Times that the family never discussed their Creole ancestry. Quote, it was just never an issue, he said. Never discussed, buried, survived by silence. But then Henry Louis Gates Jr. shows up. The Harvard professor, yes, the host of Finding Your Roots. The man who has spent his career recovering exactly these kind of erased histories. He traveled to the Vatican, sat across from Pope Leo, and hand-delivered a genealogical report that traced the Pope's ancestry back 5 generations across 4 continents. What the report confirmed? The Pope has at least 17 Afro-Creole ancestors, free people of color in Louisiana before the Civil War, enslaved people, painful complexity that defines Black American history, enslaved people who, after gaining their freedom, themselves became slave owners. His ancestor, Marie Jean, was freed from slavery and then went on to own more than 1,000 acres of land and at least 20 enslaved people. Gates said this about the Pope.
He's the perfect Pope for this moment in our world of so much cultural diversity because his genome is truly cosmopolitan. I use the word ecumenical in the Greek sense, you know, embrace of the world. And so he has ancestors from everywhere, including Black ancestors, mixed race ancestors, slave owners, enslaved, the whole thing.
This is the story of the Americas, right? It's messy, it's complicated, and deeply human. My people, the man who just apologized for the document that started the African slave trade carries in his own blood the story of people that document was used to destroy. His grandfather fled from Haiti, the nation that broke slavery, to New Orleans, the heart of the American slave economy. His family passed as white to survive the consequences of the very system that the Vatican helped build. And now he sits in Rome, in the chair of the very institution that signed the permission slip. And he says, I ask for pardon. My people, if that is not the most layered, most painful, and most extraordinary story in the world right now, then I don't know what is. But let's be clear about something, right? This apology is historic, yes. For centuries, the Vatican's position was essentially this. The church has always upheld the dignity of every human being. Individual Christians may have done wrong, but the institution itself, the Holy See, not our problem. That position just ended. On Monday, Leo changed the conversation entirely. Here's what he said directly on the record in his first official encyclical, quote, Neither can we deny or diminish the delay with which both society and the church came to denounce the scourge of slavery. In antiquity and the Middle Ages, many individuals and even ecclesiastical institutions had slaves. Already in the early modern period, the Apostolic See of Rome, responding to requests from sovereigns, intervened several times in order to regulate and legitimize forms of subjugation, and in certain cases, the enslavement of infidels. End quote. The Apostolic See, not just individual Christians, he said, the See of the Vatican itself. And then he continues, quote, it was only in the 19th century that a formal, absolute, and universal condemnation of slavery was clearly articulated, notably under Pope Leo XIII. This development offers a clear example of the Church's growth in understanding the perennial truths of Revelation that she safeguards. Although there was not always consistency in practice, given that slavery was long tolerated before being unequivocally condemned, there has been a continuous affirmation throughout history of the dignity of every human being created in the image of God, even if it took 18 centuries for its full incompatibility with slavery to be explicitly recognized. This constitutes a wound in Christian memory, one from which we cannot consider ourselves detached. It is impossible not to feel deep sorrow when contemplating the immense suffering and humiliation endured by so many in stark contrast to the immeasurable dignity as persons infinitely loved by the Lord. And for this, in the name of the church, I sincerely ask for pardon. End quote. My people, 18 centuries is how long it took for the church to finally condemn slavery. And now, in 2026, is the first time a pope has officially apologized on behalf of the church. So yes, this moment matters. The words matter. But my people, I really need us to ask the harder question. Because here's what the apology does not say. The papal bulls, Dum Diversas and Romanus Pontifex, the actual documents that authorized the slave trade, they've never been formally revoked. In 2023, the Vatican repudiated the doctrine of discovery that grew out of those bulls. But the bulls themselves, they're still technically valid Vatican documents. The apology came from a man, but the paperwork is still on the books. And then there is this. Just 2 months before this apology, on March 25th, 2026, something happened at the United Nations that should have made front pages around the world everywhere, but most people missed it. Ghana's president, John Dramani Mahama, standing at the United Nations on behalf of the entire African Union, brought forward a resolution to formally declare the transatlantic slave trade the gravest crime against humanity in history. 123 countries voted yes. 123. Three countries voted no. The United States of America, Argentina, and Israel. And the countries that abstained? The entire European Union. Yeah. Including Portugal. Including Spain. Portugal, the country that received those papal bulls in 1452. The country that built the first slave trade on the west coast of Africa using God's permission as their cover story. In 2026, Portugal abstained from a vote recognizing what that slave trade did to humanity. And now the Vatican says, sorry. But Portugal still hasn't. And the United States, the country that benefited more than any other from enslaved African labor, voted no. So my people, think about the picture that paints. The Pope, whose family survived the consequences of the slave trade by disappearing into whiteness, issues an apology from Rome. And the nations that built their wealth on that trade are still not ready to call it what it is. So the question that sits underneath all of this is not, was the apology real? The question is, what comes after sorry? What comes after? Because an apology without revoking the documents is a press release. An apology without the nations involved actually following suit is a headline. And an apology without reparations from one of the wealthiest institutions on earth is a beginning, yes, but not an ending. Historian Shannon D. Williams called this apology a monumental step toward the kind of essential truth-telling and reparation that many Catholics have prayed and worked to witness. She used the word reparation, not just apology, but action. And that is the word that every government, every institution, and every country still refusing to say needs to hear. Now, my people, this is the part of the story that I really need us to pay attention to. Because what happened this week is not an isolated event. You see, it is a pattern. And once you see it, well, you cannot unsee it. Just 8 days before the Pope issued this apology, something else happened in Edinburgh, Scotland, that barely made the news. On May 17th, the Church of Scotland issued a formal apology for its historical role in slavery, adopted at the Church's General Assembly in Edinburgh. The Church of Scotland, also known as the Kirk, is the National Church of Scotland. 5 million members, centuries of history. And for all those centuries, some of its members had given a theological justification for slavery before its abolition in Scots law in 1878 and the British Empire in the 1830s. Others had directly or indirectly benefited from the transatlantic chattel slave trade, with wealth contributing to the building of churches and universities to train ministers. And let that land. The churches built with slave money. The ministers trained with slave money. The institutions that shaped Scottish society funded brick by brick by the suffering of African people. And the words that they chose for the apology, quote, "We are grieved beyond telling by the extraordinary suffering that we have inflicted through our actions and our inaction on our brothers and sisters. We repent, committing ourselves to changing course and bearing fruit worthy of repentance." End quote. Grieved beyond telling. Now, here's what makes the Church of Scotland's apology different from just words on a paper, right? Before issuing the apology, they went to Jamaica, an ecumenical pilgrimage to the Caribbean, building relationships with the United Church in Jamaica and the Cayman Islands and the Presbyterian Church in Trinidad and Tobago. They sat with the people. They listened to the communities still living with the consequences. And having made that journey, the church committed to reparatory next steps. Not just, you know, sorry, but a commitment to action, a working group. Next steps to be brought to the 2027 General Assembly. My people, 8 days apart, two of the most significant Christian institutions in the Western world, both saying for the first time in their histories, we were wrong. We were complicit, and we're sorry. And this is coming less than 2 months after the 123 nations at the United Nations voted to declare the transatlantic slave trade the gravest crime against humanity, spearheaded by Ghana and the African Union. And we cannot forget about the Church of England, too, which has also already apologized for its role in slavery and put 100 million euros on the table for a reparative fund, and is being pushed to do more. It's being pushed to 1 billion euros. So now ask yourself, what is happening here? because this is not a coincidence. Something is shifting slowly, imperfectly, but make no mistake, something is moving. The question that the very Reverend Sally Foster Fulton asked in Edinburgh, the woman who actually presented the Church of Scotland's apology, is the same question that echoes through all of this. Healing begins where truth is spoken. Truth is being spoken in Rome, in Edinburgh, in New York, at the United Nations. But truth without action is still just a statement. And my people, this is the part of the story that I really need us to pay attention to, because this is not just about the Catholic Church. What happened this week is a convergence, right? A collision of forces that have been building for years. And it is telling us something very important about where the world is right now. Think about the timeline. Ghana leads the African Union in pushing a UN resolution that names the slave trade the greatest crime in human history. It passes. The US votes no. Europe abstains. 2 months later, the Pope, a man carrying Black ancestry, issues the first ever Vatican apology for directly authorizing that trade. And he buries it deliberately inside a document about artificial intelligence. My people, that is not an accident. Because Pope Leo made a direct argument inside that encyclical. He said the church's past failure, authorizing the extraction of African bodies in 1452, must be held up as a warning against what is happening right now. The unregulated labor conditions in the mines where the minerals for AI chips are extracted, the Congo, children in those mines, wealth flowing out and suffering staying in. He was saying that we helped build the system that exploited African people for five centuries. We cannot, while a new version of that system is being built right now, right before our eyes, with algorithms instead of ships, with rare earth minerals instead of cotton, with supply chains instead of chains. And my people, that connection is very real. Because the DRC, the Democratic Republic of Congo, holds 70% of the world's cobalt reserves. That cobalt goes into every AI chip, every electric vehicle, every smartphone that you're holding right now. And I have a special episode coming for you just about that. The same continent, the same extraction, the same question of who gets the wealth and who gets the cost. Yeah, the Pope is the first major Western religious leader to name that connection out loud. And it matters, because what we're witnessing in this moment between Ghana's UN resolution, the papal apology, and the silence of Europe and America is a global argument about accountability. And whether the world is ready to move from acknowledgement to action, from sorry to something. And right now, the answer is not clear. It is not. And so where do we go from here, my people? Because this story does not have a clean ending, at least not yet. The papal bulls are still on the books. Portugal and Spain have still not made their own accounting. The United States voted no at the United Nations. No. To calling the slave trade a crime against humanity. And the Vatican, for all the power of what the Pope said, his words, still has not announced any concrete steps towards reparatory justice or action. But something has shifted. For the first time, the institution that wrote the permission slip has admitted it. For the first time. 123 nations stood up at the UN and said this was the gravest crime in history. For the first time, the man holding the most powerful religious office in the world is someone whose own family lived inside the story that he just apologized for. History moved this week. Yes, slowly, painfully, incompletely. But it did move. And I believe the pressure is only going to grow because Ghana is not done. The African Union is not done. And the millions of people across Africa and the diaspora who have been waiting, not for an apology, but for something real, they're not done either. And so now I turn it over to you. Do you think the Pope's apology is meaningful, or is it too little too late? Should the Vatican formally revoke the papal bulls that started all of this? And what do you think about, what do you think real accountability looks like? Not just from the church, but from Portugal, from Spain, and the United States. Drop your thoughts in the comments and let's talk about it. Because again, this is why this community is here. And also tell me where you're tuning in from. We have people joining us from all across the world, Africa, UK, Caribbean, Americas. And I love knowing where in the world this conversation is reaching you. And before I let you go, a very quick couple of updates and reminders for you. Our homecoming tour is coming up in Ghana, 2027, and spots are filling up fast. If you have been thinking about visiting Africa, not just as a tourist, but with intention and purpose to understand the landscape, to explore opportunities to engage meaningfully, I would love to invite you to join me in a community of global leaders, thinkers, and investors.
That's Guardian Radio AM. We're going to take a quick commercial break right now. I see you, caller. Do not hang up, caller. That just now was The Breakdown by the Pana Genius TV. The host there was Sandra De Buartin, an African there. It was dynamic, wasn't it? I want to have your feedback on that. I also going to speak about out of the 193 nations that are a part of the United Nations, only 123 voted that the slave trade, first crime to happen in humanity. They had 70 countries abstained. We had 3 countries who said, no, that's not the worst crime. I entertain it. We can talk about that when we come back.
They'll call you in for your x-ray shortly.
That's why they call it a waiting room. You won't have that problem at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner. We never schedule multiple appointments, so you'll be in and out in no time. And if your initial screening reveals a concern, our radiologist can conduct an alternative screening right then and there. Call 328-8157 to schedule an appointment at Fourth Terrace Diagnostic Center or Imaging at Groner today.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio AM. Of course, it's C.A. Nuri. I'm your host for today. Let's go straight to the phone line, and then I'll give some commentary on what you just heard. I encourage you to sign up on YouTube to that channel, the Pana Genius TV, P-A-N-A-G-E-N-I-A-S TV. And that's The Breakdown with host Sandra De Buartin. So you can go and look for her. Let's go call her Guardian Radio AM.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Nuri.
Good morning.
Yeah, great show, great chronology, but, you know, for me, this is nothing new. I first learned about these treaties from about 1977 or 1978 in a grade 8 history class at St. John's College. So I don't know if it's anything new to you, but you just started working the Guardian. For over a decade, from Lester Cox, Carlton Smith, have been calling these talk shows and telling people, educated and alike, that these geopolitical scenarios are really all about the Earth's resources, all right? We're suffering the losses. Marcus Garvey made a very infamous speech that I've repeated many times on Uncle Show, and it spoke about Africa's redemption. There's also a Dutch philosopher who gave speech on Africa's redemption, right? And spoke about the rise of Africa. He used the word Afrikaners, right? There's a difference between the Afrikaners and the Africans, right? So you would have noticed even during the colonization periods, they would have run a railroad from South Africa to Morocco. The reason why it's called a railroad, because they railroaded us. And these railroads would have been, have an itinerary that were close to resources. So I'm not a genius by any means. What I'm saying is it's quite obvious that it's about the Earth's resources. But most of us are mindless about it. And as it relates to the papal bulls that she spoke about, right? The most infamous one that stood to me is the Treaty of Tordesillas. And so the one that she spoke with was previous, right? So what that means is that after learning these things, they all reported to the Pope, and then the Pope decided, right, to God, which is a great laughter hereafter, that he would divide the world in half between Spain and Portugal. And we saw the subsequent fall of the rise of the European wars, intervention, et cetera, the battle for the West Indies and other parts of the world. So when she talked about the lack of reparatory justice, by any means, it is really necessary. But for me, as it relates to the United Nations, Arab countries and many Eastern countries were reluctant to join the League of Nations, which is the precursor to the United Nations. That land was donated by John D. Rockefeller. So the Arab nations, they knew the sinister agenda behind the United Nations. So remember now, they are two mean, non-permanent, non-observer states. The Holy See, they call it the Vatican City, and the state of Palestine. And there's a reason for that. So when you look at, on a previous follow-up show, what you should do is delve into the six organs of the United Nations and see the status quo, how it is set up and how it is designed to run. It's an injustice. It's not, it doesn't bring anything fair. People may think so, but that's because they are lazy. They are cognitive ease thinkers. They don't want to get into anything complicated. But do a follow-up show on this, because it is much, you see what I'm saying, my brother? And also, delve into some of the literature of the German reformer Marx from the Nancy that he was in. So also do a follow-up show on some of the narratives. And show, I started to read the narratives on the Treaty of Tordesillas. You wouldn't believe how sophisticated it is. And she made a very important point. It still stands today in OCA. And so we're fighting one another, but we don't really know the real causes because of the lack of collective consciousness. So I'm just saying that, you know, these are things that I highlight the point that we really should pay attention to one another. I was stressing this. Most people don't really understand what's going on in the world. It's all about the Earth's resources. Good day.
Okay, thank you very much for that, 52. In the United Nations, there are 193 nations. 52 reminds us that there are two observer nations, which is the state of Palestine and, of course, Vatican City, which is a state by itself, who are observers or have observer status in the United Nations. And out of that 193 nations, when the president of Ghana put forward that they believe, or be it known, that the slave trade has been the worst crime against humanity ever, 123 countries agreed with him and voted and said yes. Three countries said no. And we need to say their names so we all know who are the three countries. And those three countries are Argentina, the United States of America, and Israel. They voted wholeheartedly no. Then there were 70 countries who decided to abstain. Said, I'm not even participating inside this conversation at all. And those are the whole European Union, all of Europe, all that Western countries, all of Europe, European Union, said, I'm not even participating, siding with this at all. Right? And we, as people who live in the Caribbean, as black, white, Asian, indigenous people, need to appreciate what is happening, what is being said to us as a people, right? What is being said to the Americas here, to the Western civilization, what is being said, and then we need to make some decisions moving forward on what we should be doing. right? I would like to commend Pope Leo XIV for his apology, right? I'm not sure if his apology came out based on his background and his acknowledgement of his background, and therefore he said, okay, I'm going to make it take it a step further. I'm not sure if the Holy See is going to take it a step further by doing something tangible, or this was a one incident where one pope saying something and they say, okay, don't worry about it, that's him, grandstanding, and we're going to move when he transitioned, we're going to move away from this, right? Or whether the Holy See, the Vatican, is going to do something substantial, say, hey, you know what, we made some, our organization in the beginning made some missteps, and with apologies, right, comes reparation, and that we will make steps to help those people who we offended. I see we have another caller here. Guardian Radio AM, go ahead, caller. You're live. Go ahead, caller.
Hello.
Hello. Go ahead.
Mr. Zuri.
Hey.
Good morning. You see, just like back in the 1960s, when the black Bahamians used to populate faster than the white Bahamians, the white Bahamians knew that it was just a matter of time before the black people take over the country. And that's why they started sharing up all the land, all the front land around the harbor with the beach, best beaches, all around the east, all down South Beach, all around Lifetime and so forth. The white people started. When the PLP finally took over, Norman Solomon stood up in the House of Assembly and said, congratulations, Mr. Penland. You won this little house in Bay Street, but all around you, you and your people will be coming to business till death be apart. And even if we don't watch what is going on in our country, just like the population of the southern island of the Bahamas named Hispaniola comes to the Bahamas, if we don't watch out, they populate, there will be no more Bahamians here. This will be the new Haiti.
Okay. As we continue the conversation and acknowledge what comes after, sorry, what should we be doing, right? I want to have the conversation on we as the Bahamas and how we should be coming together to push the Bahamas forward in terms of repairing things that went wrong, in terms of uplifting the Bahamas, and in terms of being a part of a global conversation. Are we prepared to be a part of a global conversation? Are we prepared to risk all to make a point of fact, of a point of this is wrong, this must be made corrected? Are we prepared to ask for reparations? I know we have a reparation committee in the Bahamas, and a number of Bahamians, black, white, and other, who said, man, no. That has been the past. We must move on from the past in order to move forward. And some people will question whether these tough conversations must be had. We have a population where we have a large population of mulattoes, right, who feel that they are not included in our national dialogue, our national conversation. And we must have tough conversations to find out how can we include them? How can we have the conversation that you are phenotypically white, but you also have black ancestry? Can you celebrate the blackness in you as you celebrate the whiteness in you? And is that problematic for you to celebrate the blackness? And is it problematic for a black majority to accept a large population who's phenotypically white and allow them to express themselves, to say, well, we celebrate being Bahamian differently, and we are not able to wanting to dictate to them to say, no, you must celebrate being Bahamian like how the majority celebrate being Bahamian. Will we make room for those people who are trying to live a particular Bahamian way that may not be the same as the majority? I see we have another telephone call here. Guardian Radio AM, you're live. Go ahead, caller. You're live.
Hello.
Hello, go ahead.
How you doing, C?
Doing well, man.
I just listening to the conversation. What you talking about, and where do we go from here? Remember Marlo Butler and Selendon Penland? They was at a particular point in time through the hourglass, and, you know, the Macy joined the Parliament. Here it is. We have the Queen. Statue on Bay Street. We got a half of Marlo Butler piddling on our dollar. But we as a people, we still going round in this circle in the desert. You got to understand. Piddling them might have brought us over to Egypt. Still in the desert. You hear what I'm saying? Until we get as a nation to find out, all right, you want to be a part of the Zionist, new Zionists with different tongues, different tribes, whatever. You could be a part of this promise now, but you got to be a part of the law, God's law. You see what I mean? The Pope and all of them, yeah, they all right. We got to understand one thing. God don't change. His laws don't change. When Moses come down with the law, all of them who was doing all of them worshiping sexual immortality, morality, that's still the same with God. So when you come to a nation, you got to buy, so you got to graft it, graft yourself in a nation. And for the nation to move forward, everybody got to be on the same accord. Right now, we got this little town going on, so it's overcrowded. We have islands like Honduras. Need population. Need infrastructure. I don't see why we can't get some initiatives for behemoths so we could keep this behemoth nation going for years to come. I'm trying to populate some of these islands. Who for it, who with it, could be it, with it, who against it. And then they just got to go, they could fit in. That's all I got to say to it.
Okay, thank you very much. The caller mentioned building a nation, a statue of Queen Victoria, and he juxtaposed it to the bust of Milo. And I ask you, can't we have both or make space for both? Or do we have to blackwash white history in the Bahamas, that the white behemoths no longer matter, so therefore we'll forget them altogether? Is that what we are calling for? Or is there space, or can we make room, being a majority of black people, to say, no, we have a white past, we have a white history that is a part of us, that makes us a part of a whole, and we will make space for that. We'll make room for them to express themselves, to be called Conky Joe Bahamians and be proud, to get access to health care, to go in the hospital and wait like everyone else, right? Or we'll say, man, you are white, and therefore all of this is we inherited, and there's no space for you no more. You caused this. We need to have some tough decisions and find out, how do we become a nation? And when I say how do we become a nation, not have separate tribes, have one common belief system where we say we all are working for one common, I guess that's what they quote the national anthem, loftier goal, eh? How do we have that conversation? Who has that conversation? As we have a number of people of African descent said, they still are hurting. Can white behemoths acknowledge that, yes, what you all went through still impacts you to this day? We see it. We see the impact, and we will work with you to get you through it. And can we as black behemoths say, we've seen how the country has changed over the years, and sometimes you are disenfranchised in terms of opportunities because you're simply light-skinned, and we are willing to work with you because you are entitled to have all of the benefits just like we. Conversations. Conversations. And then we got to ask the Americans, why you vote no? Why you vote no against us? What we do, you all? What we do? Why? Who over there pressuring their government to say, man, why you all vote no? Slavery was it was a monster. That slave trade was a monster. Someone got to acknowledge that it was bad. This has been Guardian Radio AM with C.A. Nuri. You have a beautiful day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM.
streaming on GuardianTalkRadio.com and the Guardian Radio app, Nassau, Bahamas.